The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank. Zoners, this was actually the episode that almost wasn't, but more on that in a moment, because this episode actually is. And when this episode actually is, then it is time to acknowledge our fine sponsors of Bazong and the Project Entertainment Network. Zongers, you know I am talking about the legendary Subculture Courses and Clothing. Let me tell you about these wonderful people. I went window shopping at subculturecorsets.com to find what they have in store for you fine zongers and everybody else out there in the world in fashion and clothing, accessories, shoes, and all the accoutrement. And zongers, you know, when I do go window shopping for these ads, I like to check out men's clothing, women's clothing, different things. This week, I haven't checked out their line of handbags. And so, like, I'm not a guy who really has a good fashion sense for handbags, but when I went over to their handbag section, there was one handbag that just popped right out at me, because I'm doing the Bizarre and Weird Fiction podcast, and the Bizarro Awards are named after the rather weird book Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. You know what they have over there at Subculture Corsets in handbags? They have a one-of-a-kind Alice in Wonderland book purse. That's right. It looks like a classic bound, leather-bound, hardcover book, and it's actually a purse. It's a gorgeous-looking purse. I said I'm not really, you know, good on picking out fashion sense and especially accessories. God, I'm terrible at it, but I know a good thing when I see it. And zongers, you're going to love the Alice in Wonderland book purse. It looks exactly like a wonderful classic copy of Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll, but inside is all your personal effects. You know, if you buy it and put all your personal effects in it. So there it is, zongers. Available for an extremely reasonable price. And Bazong's going to make the price even more reasonable for you. If you put in the promotional code Bazong at checkout, you will receive an additional 10% off your Alice in Wonderland book purse and your entire order. So after you put the book purse in, go shop for some hair accessories, some skirts, some tops, some pants, some other books, and all the other great stuff they have at Subculture Courses and Clothing. Of course, you can also do this if you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area, and you're close to the Avenues Mall. You can go right to their flagship store and shop until you drop there as well, and you can still scream Bazong and get 10% off your entire order in store as well. And however you shop, it's always free shipping at Subculture Courses and Clothing. Zongers, I teased at the top of the episode that this is the show that almost wasn't. Now, why is that, zongers? That is because just a little over 24 hours ago, I had a tooth ripped from my head. Not because I had some kind of accident or anything, but because I woke up in the morning with, it looked like I was sucking on a baseball. Like if you try to put a baseball like down in your lower jaw, it looked like I was sucking on a baseball. My entire lower jaw was just completely swollen, ridiculously swollen, and it was very difficult for me to talk. Everything was tight, and as you can imagine, swollen up. So long story short, I had an abscessed tooth that needed desperately to come out, and the hardest part was finding a dentist or somebody open on a Saturday that could work on an emergency basis. So a bunch of phone calls and everything, found somebody. I wound up basically at an oral surgeon where he extracted the tooth and alleviated as much as the pus that was causing the baseball in my jaw. And during this whole procedure, my biggest worry was not about all the pain I was in and losing a tooth and all that stuff. It's all correctable. What isn't correctable is getting out the new episode of Bazong. I was like, my God, am I going to be able to talk and conduct a podcast interview and podcast when all is said and done. But the wonderful surgeon, oral surgeon, Dr. Ladman, took care of everything. I'm only in mild pain, and I'm able to do this, as you can hear, with hopefully a pretty clear voice. As clear as you get out of Mr. Frank anyway, right? So, Zogners, all's well. I'm able to do this with just, like I said, a mild amount of pain, and we sally forth, Zongers, with this week's guest, because I did desperately want to get this guest on. I've been trying to make it all work to get him on this week. I just recently read his book, you know, picked it up because I have a healthy interest in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So when I went searching for books on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, the author's book that popped up was called Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin, which immediately piqued my interest because it's not like a Bitcoin book that I had ever seen before. Usually it's just history and the story of Bitcoin or how to invest and that type of rather mundane, boring stuff. But this was obviously a story. Whether it was true or not, I hadn't known at the time, but it turned out it's a fantastic crime noir thriller with all kinds of weird aspects to it. By the time I was done, it was my first 5-star read of the year 2018, and there was no doubt in my mind that I needed to bring on this week's guest, Mr. George Billions, to talk to him about buying illegal bugs with Bitcoin, talk about his writing, and also upon researching him, I found he has a lot of connections out and about in the world to people in Bizarro. So we're going to talk about all that stuff this week on Bizong. It's my pleasure to introduce all you Zongers to my new friend, the one and only Mr. George Billions. Give us the gong. It is my pleasure to welcome this week to the show a gentleman's book who I just read sort of out of nowhere, and it was like, bang, this is like one of the greatest things I've read all year. I think it qualifies certainly as weird fiction, if not has twinges of Bizarro to it. It is my pleasure to welcome to the podcast this week the one and only Mr. George Billions. George, welcome to Bizong.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Frank. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. You're the one. It's rare that I get this, but I do occasionally. There's a book that grabs my attention. I read it, and it blows me away. And that book, having you on, is called Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin, a fantastic book that I picked up. I found simply because of my interest in Bitcoin, and I wanted to read more books about Bitcoin. And when I saw there's a fiction book about Bitcoin, I was like, holy fuck, I have to read this thing. And I picked it up, and I was pleasantly surprised by Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin. What was it that drove you to write this book about Bitcoin?
Well, you know, I had the seed in my head for a few years before I actually wrote it. I think there was a lot of buzz about what was going on the darknet markets. And at the time when we heard about Bitcoin, it was always like, oh, the kids have figured out how to buy drugs on the internet using this mysterious Bitcoin. And then I think I read an article and it was like, well, what else can we buy on the darknet besides drugs? And the article kind of like danced around it like, oh, we found a listing for a murder for hire, and then there are some weapons for sale, but actually we're not sure any of that's legit, so it probably looks like just drugs are available. But then I what if there was some other weird shit available? And then somehow I just kind of landed on weird bugs. What kind of weird thing can you get in the mail? How about a weird bug? And it just kind of it kind of grew from there. I actually wrote a different draft at some point, but it wasn't nearly as interesting, and so that kind of stagnated for a while. And then when I started again, I had a better idea of what it should be about. So
it's a really wonderful story. Like I said, it was Bitcoin that, you know, that dragged me into the story and got me interested. But upon reading the story, I mean, Bitcoin plays really a bit part in the whole story itself.
It's right.
It's a really, really good crime noir thriller that's both like dirty street grimy and like tech savvy, and there happens to be a little bit of Bitcoin stuff in it. on top of that, too, there's a sort of horror element, a weird sort of mystical horror element to it all, too. Interesting to find when I after reading you and researching you a bit more. While the book is not generally identified as bizarre per se, you have a lot of connections to people in the bizarro genre. Can you tell me about what your experience is with bizarro, if at all?
Oh, you know, I'm still kind of unclear where the line is between like bizarro and like, you know, what they're calling the new weird. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are all these kind of nebulous genre distinctions, but I have noticed that as my work gets out there, I see my name pop near other authors that I've read, like Kevin Strange, for example, has been on your podcast. Mm-hmm. And now I see my name next to his sometimes. Well, like my also bots on Amazon are a lot of bizarro authors. And so I guess I'm kind of I've just kind of fallen into that category. And really, like, indie fiction in general is pretty new to me. I kind of fell down that rabbit hole when I subscribed to Kindle Unlimited just a few years ago, and I found out there's all this material that's so weird and wonderful and nothing like the stuff I've been reading for years. Like, not the kind of stuff you find when you walk into Borders on display, you know? Or it's not Borders anymore, so Barnes & Noble, for example.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's been so much my experience, too, discovering indie is, you know, you read it and you're like, this stuff is every bit as good as that mass market, you know, big seven publisher thing. And sometimes better or at least as good as. And, you know, price-wise, as a reader, it's half the price, if not more. So it's a wonderful place to discover, like you said, too, stuff that's not, like, none of the big guys would ever even dream of touching subjects like that.
Right, sort of right.
So I can see.
Have you read the book?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was
I was going to say, have you?
Go ahead.
Paperbacks from Hell. Have you seen that?
I have not actually read it yet, but of course, I have every intention of reading it. I just have not gotten to that one yet.
Okay, so the idea is there. He shows you different examples of these weird old pulp horror paperbacks, and then there's kind of this undercurrent in the book where he's lamenting the end of this era of pulp fiction, because the books he describes they're really fucking bizarre and out there. And you read this book and you're like, yeah, I don't see a lot of fiction like that now. But the thing is, I feel like that kind of vibe is coming back with the indies, and there's just such a huge amount of them. We're not seeing them in the pulp format exactly with the mass market paperbacks. But if you look on Amazon, there's just a shit ton of stuff out there to read now.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Especially if you have weird tastes, there it is. It's all out there. It's coming out like crazy, you know?
Maybe you're tapping into something. Maybe it's not the new weird we're looking for. We're looking for the new pulp.
I think so. That's kind of how I look at it. Like, it's less about the specific genre distinctions for me and more about this whole kind of vibe where people they're kind of like going against the grain of, you know, what the trends have been in publishing for a long time. It's kind of putting out whatever they want. And it's darker and it's weirder. I think there are fewer rules in general, but there's just so much amazing stuff. And yeah, I think it's pulp, you know, I think it has to do with like the volume of material. And I think a lot of the better, I don't want to say better, but like there are some prolific writers just really banging out material. And I think like the quantity of material, I don't know. It's a lot of vague definition kind of things, but yeah.
Well, that's also the beauty of it all, I think, too. I mean, often when we talk about bizarro, there's, you know, there's the horror bizarro, there's the Western bizarro, there's bizarro noir. Like, it bizarro is sort of every genre, and it's all genres, and that makes it, as you said, like, sort of a nebulous definition of what it all is. And I branded this podcast as the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, just so I didn't have to pigeonhole like Bizarro only. I just wanted anything or anybody writing just weird stuff to be able to come on the show and talk about, which is what, you know, I felt qualified buying illegal bugs with Bitcoin. It was, you know, it's a really awesome, straightforward crime noir. And yet it's got a lot of weird stuff that you would never find in a straightforward crime noir. And then, like you said, you
that's what I was going for.
Yeah, and you go on to Amazon and like look at, like you said, the also bots and stuff, and you see guys like Anderson Prunty and those people,
yes.
and it's to see those names, you're like, yeah, well, yeah, I can see that kind of thing going on. So, and obviously, the also bots means that people who read Bizarro are also checking out your book, also. So there's got to be that weird appeal, by and large, to the Bizarro reading public. So. You know, there it is. Is that how you sort of came to even discover Bizarro was there, just because of like, who are these people, or were you kind of aware of it regardless?
No, you know, it comes back to the Kindle Unlimited thing. And, you know, I subscribed to it for a month or two and I was about to cancel it. Like, oh, there's nothing good on here. And, I don't remember what exactly it was. I think maybe it was, I know that, Cures of the Constant Hum by William Pauley III was one of the first weird indie horror books I read. And I think once I read that, I just kind of fell down the rabbit hole, because then, you know, once you find what you like, you start looking up the different publishers and stuff like that. And then there's so much on there. And, you know, I started making friends with people on Goodreads who had similar tastes, and it just out there was so much more material out there than I had any idea. And then that's when I started hearing these, you know, names of authors that we're talking about now.
I wondered too,
I didn't know about Bizarro.
So with discovering the indie stuff, is that what made it okay for you to start publishing? Were you a writer before you discovered indie, or was it indie that like inspired you to start writing and publishing?
Well, yeah, definitely. I was doing a lot of freelance writing in the, leading up to that. Just all kinds of random things like product reviews and entertainer biographies, whatever came my way, really. And so I was writing stuff, and I used to write like I used to have a blog and just kind of write like weird stories that have happened to me and things. That was like 10 years ago, at least. But then, yeah, I started finding these indies, and I was like, yeah, you know, I think I want to play, too. I think I might be able to do some stuff. You know, I was really inspired by the fact that, you know, all these writers weren't restrained by the traditional rules that have governed publishing and, you know, fiction in general, I think, for a long time. I mean, the old gatekeepers are gone. And now people get to do whatever they want, I guess.
It's so true.
So, yeah, I wanted to do that. So, I tried it, and the response was good. So I kind of ran with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and of course, you're completely self-published. It's not a publishing house you're going through. So you've had to learn the layout and the tricks of the trade and all that and marketing to a degree. So how is the learning curve been for you, you know, picking up what it takes?
You know, marketing is a huge deal. I think it's the main thing. And so, okay, before I tried doing this, I did do a few experiments with publishing smut on Amazon because I had heard the market is incredibly thirsty. Like, if you look at the top 100 on Amazon, you will be surprised by how many shirtless muscle men you see. Because when people talk about books, they don't really talk about romance, but it's a huge segment of the book buying population. So I did a few of those, and what's interesting is they kind of sell themselves. You don't have to do any marketing. And if you're willing to continue banging them out, you can kind of like ride a wave, because the way the algorithms work on Amazon, they push you up if you have a new book out. So like the people who are making it, writing like, Dirty Little Novels, they are really just cranking them out, like at least one a month, something like that. I'd done that, and then I started falling into these indie books, and I was like, well, let me try doing that. Let me see if I could write a book and publish on Amazon and just, you know, write a story I just feel like telling, see what happens. And the response was not great, honestly. Like, I moved a few copies, but compared to the smut, like, crickets, you know, mm-hmm. like, nothing. But, you know, a year later or whatever, I put out another book. I was like, you know, fuck it, let's try it. Let's see what happens. And I made a little bit more noise. And I think maybe it's kind of a long-term game. I'll just keep putting out books. And each time I pick up a handful of new readers who want to keep reading my stuff. And we'll see how it goes. But overall, I'm very happy with the response.
So do you still play in the smut markets, or is it just too soul-sucking to continue doing?
No, I don't really bother with that anymore. You have to keep a very rigorous schedule because of the way the algorithms work. If mm-hmm. you stop putting out material, that's kind of the end of things. Uh-huh. My old stuff still moves a few units every month. Mm-hmm. without me having to do anything. But my other stuff is just, it seems to be worth more of my time. And also, you know, I don't make very much money off my George Billions books directly, but the reviews on those books have helped me get better writing gigs than I've ever had. Oh, you know, I used okay. to have to take like whatever came my way, and now I'm getting like neat little fiction gigs and stuff. So, it works out somehow.
Now, what is it you mean by fiction gigs? Are you doing like ghostwriting things? What are you referring to?
Oh yeah, yeah. I do ghostwriting. I do some editing. You know, anything like that, really.
Oh, okay.
That comes my way.
I gotcha.
I'll take it.
Now, it must be difficult, you know, trying to find your way into you know, getting yourself more prominent to make some money, because your name is, of course, George Billions, and with that, some you might think comes a certain, like, who does this guy think he is, Mr. George Billions? Do you get that sort of thing, people calling you out on the swagger of your name, or not really?
Oh, no, not really, not so far.
Or do they think maybe, oh Billions, he must have something going on there.
No, you know, I have had, like, I did have a ghostwriting client who told me that was one of the reasons he chose me. He said he really loved the name. So, I mean, that counts for something. No, I just thought it was kind of a interesting, ridiculous sort of name. Not my real name. It's just something I picked out. I actually have, well, because I mentioned, you know, my ghostwriting stuff, I actually have stuff out all over the net in, like, under a lot of different names. Mm-hmm. Different personas I have adopted over the years,
right,
for different purposes.
So have you been doing this ghostwriting thing for longer than you've been publishing as George Billions?
Oh yeah, that's a relative thing. I think maybe I published my first one in maybe December of 2016, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's been like less than 2 years since I been publishing as George Billions.
Okay.
So it's a new game.
And the ghostwriting thing, I guess you're all over the place genre-wise as to the jobs you take on?
Yeah, I mean, historically, I've done, like, a lot of really, really boring, like, product-related articles. Like article-length reviews on a product I've never used. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a bunch of follow-up articles related to that, or, you know, I did entertainer biographies for a couple years. It's been a lot of progress stuff, and only really since I started publishing as George Billions has my work shifted over more towards fiction. And I've gotten a variety of stuff. Like, I just finished editing a historical romance novel, and I've done a number of stories for kids' story podcasts, which is kind of interesting. Like, if you've read my George Billions material, to know this is somehow led me to kids' story gigs.
And that it all derived from smut writing.
Right, exactly. It's a weird arc.
I am always intrigued by the ghost writer and how they're able to, you know, play the field, as it were. And you know, I can understand, you know, not having your name on it per se, and just because the bucks are there to make it, it's no big deal, your name on it. But just that ability to work in all different fields and make money at doing it is really cool. And how proliferate ghostwriting is in the publishing world is sort of mind-boggling.
Oh yeah,
too.
Yeah.
How did you stumble into that market?
I was kind of between things, I guess is a nice way of putting it. I wasn't really between things. I was kind of coasting, bumming along. And I don't remember where I heard Amazon had this thing called Amazon's Herc, and it was basically like they hire people from third world countries to do these like micro gigs for just a few pennies. And well, the marketing was like, you can take surveys and make some money, you know, shit like that. So I looked into it, and most of it was garbage. Most of it was like, you could work all day and maybe buy yourself a large fry or something.
Mm.
But I found one gig, and it was for a search engine optimization company. Basically, you pay them and they boost your search rankings in Google. And so they'd give a keyword, and then I'd write 150 words about it, and I'd get $1 for that. And as long as it was grammatically correct and everything was spelled right, it didn't really matter what I wrote. So it'd be kind of a stream of conscious based around whatever the keyword was, and I'd write like 100 of those a day or whatever. And that was like my first time realizing I could write stuff and make some money for it. And then so that sort of led to, you know, writing reviews of things I hadn't used and different things like that. And I just kind of, you know, stumbled along looking for different things that I could do related to that, I guess.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it is really I wish I could just give up my day job and be successful, or at least make enough money to be kind of comfortable to do that sort of thing. Are you able to maintain a career, shall we say, in that fashion? Or not really.
Well, yeah, that's a tough question, man. I don't think that most people would be comfortable. No, it's tough, and you gotta do a lot and be comfortable maybe not getting that much back. But I think it's fulfilling, and it doesn't eat away at my soul like some kind of desk job. It's been a minute since I had one of those. But yeah, I thought that was terrible, so this is definitely a better kind of gig for me. And especially with the kind of gigs I'm getting now where I get to write fiction, that's definitely just awesome, amazing.
Yeah, and I guess long term too, like you said, the George Billion stuff is you know, giving you a sort of legitimacy, a credibility, and you've noticed your workload increasing on that front too. So maybe long term everything will kind of,
yeah,
just keep snowballing, one could hope.
So we'll see how it goes, but I mean, in the meantime, it's rewarding to do. So even if it doesn't make me a billionaire or whatever, it'll be fun.
Well,
it'll be fun. I like writing books, so.
Well, that's the reward in and of itself. I'd like to circle back into buying illegal bugs with Bitcoin, because, you know, as I was reading it, there were questions that were popping up in my mind. The first and foremost is this guy some kind of criminal? Because you really had a good handle on like the drugs and stuff. Now I know bugs play a far bigger role in the book than Bitcoin does. And I know through reading your blogs that you do have a sort of exotic bug collection going on, which played a huge part in that. Did you already have an interest in a collection of exotic bugs, or did writing the book sort of birth that hobby?
I've had a couple of tarantulas, I've had scorpions, and I had a colony of Madagascar hissing cockroaches for years. Like, and that was just an impulse purchase. I was real young, and I went to the pet store I think I was skipping work or something that day, and they were 3 for $10, and the dude was like, "Oh yeah, you can infest your apartment building, man." And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds fun." So I bought them, and literally the next morning I woke up and there was a pile of baby cockroaches, like a pile of them, because that's how they come out, I guess. A pile of them on the floor of the terrarium, and I poked the pile to make sure it was what I thought it was, and they scattered, and I was like, "Holy shit!" So I ended up with this colony of them for a few years. I gave it to some dude when I was moving one time. But I hadn't had bugs for years, and then I was writing the book, and I kept looking at the different bug websites. There are some cool websites where you can buy like all kinds of different bugs and stuff. So I was like looking at the care sheets and what was available and everything. And I ended up thinking, you know, I should get some bugs again. So I bought some Madagascar hissing cockroaches. I bought 7 of them. I got them. They came from Amazon. And this was maybe January, February. I had 7. Now I have, I don't know, I've got to have at least 100. I've been trying to sell them on Craigslist and Facebook. If you're listening to this, hey, email me if you'd like me to send you a box of cockroaches. I have a bunch of cockroaches.
And they
hiss.
And you're almost a cockroach breeder now since you're giving them away. Are they?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is there a lot of interest in them? Are they kind of easy to sell, or is it?
Oh man, I wish they were easy to sell. Like these are delicious feeders for your small carnivore.
Mm.
They are great pets, and you know, like I posted on Craigslist, like I'll give you a bunch of little ones for $10 or two big. I got email from some, like, "Oh, you like big ones, don't you?" Like, yeah. Yeah, man, that's exactly what I was trying to say. I think, like, one lady brought her kid over to buy a bunch of them, but that's been it. So I'm kind of, I've fallen into, like, that classic Star Trek dilemma. But I'll figure something out.
It's funny, I've heard people say they're like, kind of neat to have as pets. But I didn't think they bred so easily or so, like,
oh,
I mean,
man,
they breed
yeah.
like cockroaches,
oh, it's
I guess.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I know a bizarre writer, his name is Danger Slater, if you're familiar with him or not. He wrote a book called I Will Rot Without You, which featured cockroaches in the storyline. So,
I got to check that out.
Oh,
I think
it's
on my Goodreads list,
yeah,
but I haven't read it yet.
A fantastic book in and of itself. But, yeah, cockroaches do figure into the story. So when he was out promoting that book, he actually bought a pair of Madagascar hissing cockroaches just to keep on his table, and you know, as a little speaking piece, a little something focal to bring people
to
the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he used that.
They're
too
definitely cool for that.
Yeah, and definitely a fantastic book too in of itself. I definitely encourage you to read that, as I would encourage anybody to read Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin. Such a wonderful book. So also, like you said, you know, the dark net plays a very integral big part of the book too. Do you have experience where you said sort of, you know, you found that you could buy these bugs and stuff on the dark net? Did you get into it much in the dark net stuff, or was it just kind of research?
You know, I did some research. I made an account. I looked around. I didn't buy anything, of course, but I looked around and saw what was available. And it really is. It's almost entirely drugs, and then, you know, a few ads for, like, you know, knockoff Gucci watches or whatever, mm-hmm. like bullshit like that. But it's unclear, like, how many people actually buy that stuff. I don't think people are really buying that stuff.
Yeah, it's all... But, yeah. It's all
what like, do I know?
Like I said, what drew me to the book to begin with was Bitcoin and my interest in Bitcoin. And, like, you know, I don't hold any Bitcoin, unfortunately. And I have a very... I think it's a very cool concept, and I don't have, obviously, it's very expensive to get into. But I always said, like, oh, I'll give you my whole book collection and shipping free. Just give me, like, one Satoshi of a Bitcoin. And, you know, because I just want to hold one, you know, hold a piece of a Bitcoin type of thing.
Yeah, right.
But that, too, you know, all through all the research, you see, oh, it's all this illicit drug trade and stuff. And it's sort of disappointing. Like, yeah, I get why that happens there. But it's sort of disappointing because, I mean, you know, the legend has it the first purchase with Bitcoin was with pizza, which is a completely innocuous commodity. And you would think that maybe by now with the interest in it, you could buy crazy things like bugs or just kind of weird shit all over the place, and it really hasn't taken place yet, unfortunately, but I think it'll get there.
I kind of hope so. I mean, I guess we'll see, because, you know, there are all kinds of cryptocurrency at the moment, but I think Bitcoin is still the only one that has really taken off or anything. I think like Dennis Rodman is trying to promote Potcoin, which is a cryptocurrency specifically for buying weed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't think that's going anywhere.
Well, there's a lot. I think I remember reading not too long ago, like Kodak has become like Kodak coin or something. Just
all these weird, useless.
Yeah. These useless like Kodak. What the fuck good are they anymore? Right. With digital. Right. And so they've almost like rebranded themselves as their own crypto thing to try to latch on. It was a really weird article about what they're doing, and it's like legit though. There are a lot of companies that are sort of, you know, they've gone by the wayside because just technology haven't been able to keep up with what their brand is, and they're almost rebranding themselves as these crypto businesses now, and it's really crazy. It's a real Wild West type of thing. It's really exciting, you know. Right. It's like the notion, the romantic notion of being a writer and everything and all this money is the same with the crypto. It's romantic to think,
you're into all this
and become a billionaire and stuff, but it's so volatile. It's crazy volatile.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing. But I did, the other thing I wanted to get into on the book is the focal bug in the book is, his name is Migo, and he's a very sort of, he's a crazy bug, and you never specifically name what type of bug he is, so I'm going to assume he's not really any specific bug, or am I wrong? Is he modeled after a single bug, or is he just sort of a bug you made up?
I don't think it's, he's not a bug of this world, exactly, you know, maybe he's a bug of some other world. It's hard to say with certainty, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did sort of bring to mind some beetles, you know, in the description. It could be this kind of beetle or that kind of beetle or a little walking stickish, a little, I don't know if he's how big or small, I guess. He is, he's a very cool-ass bug. Obviously, he's not, I didn't mean to suggest that he was actually a real bug. If you get into the book, it becomes obvious that, well, let's hope he's not of this world. I was wondering if you had a specific earthly bug in mind when you were envisioning him.
I think I had a number of bugs in my head, and I was just kind of picking out some of my favorite features and making up some other neat features. Maybe it's all, and I was writing down a thing I saw. It's hard to say.
Well, that's okay, but it answers my question. That it's like, oh yes, actually, that's a New Guinea, you know, pig ball bug or something like that. Yeah. And I'd have to go research all about them because he's a really freaking awesome bug.
And New Guinea would probably be a good place for him, honestly.
have you outside of the Madagascar hissing cockroaches too? I mean, obviously in the book it mentions a variety of roaches, a lot of which are feeders, and you said something about them being feeders, so I guess you have other types of pets too that you just use bugs to feed, or is that just something you did in the book?
Oh, that was just in the book. Well, because you know, actually, I was into to help with my roach population problem. I was looking into what kind of larger carnivorous bugs would eat these things. And it turns out because they're so big and their shells are so hard, nothing really likes to eat them. Like, I can get, like, a tegu lizard or a monitor lizard, mm-hmm. something huge. I'd have to get some kind of huge, huge lizard, something big enough to, like, get in a fight with my cat and eat its own room and shit. That eats Madagascar hissing cockroaches. No. So
that's a whole lot,
they're
yeah.
not. They're not that convenient as feeders.
But it could lead to buying illegal lizards with Bitcoin, the follow-up yeah, to. Right. That's cool, too. I'd like to take a look. I haven't read your other books yet. Of course, I fully intend to after checking out Buying Illegal Bugs. But I noticed the two others that you have, one has to do with fidget spinners, which makes me, the power there is you're talking about, you know, Bitcoin and illegal bugs, and now you're talking about fidget spinners. So you're very sort of... maybe say pop culturist in your topics is what made you choose fidget spinners to talk about?
You know, I'll be honest with you. Like the titles of my last two books, like Illegal Bugs was in my head the entire time I wrote it. It was called The Hideous Name of an Insect. Ooh. And I still kind of wish I went with that. Like I feel like maybe that would appeal a little better to my audience, but years of writing web content has made me very cynical about keywords. So I was like, well, Bitcoin's big right now. We should put that in the title. So like you said, it's not even, Bitcoin doesn't play a huge role in the book, but I thought maybe I'd move a few more units to put that in the title.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with fidget spinners, it's a little more complicated. I can't say that much about the book because I have some legal matters about it going on.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you that it is, while it is based on some true facts and events, it is ultimately a work of fiction. So that's the main thing I want to say, is that it is a work of fiction based on true events.
And if there's some legal problem, maybe we should all grab up copies before they may not be available.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think it's going to work out in my favor. Like the book is not going to be taken off the market. I'm not going to have. I'm paying a lawyer a lot of money just to ask him questions about this, and
mm-hmm.
but there aren't going to be any like penalties. Like specifically, it's going to say, owe some money based on this, but there are some things that book I guess I shouldn't really say much more about it.
Right I think we can read between the lines of where you're going with that, given you know, reading synopsis and stuff, but you're sort of saying at worst you may have to change some content to it. But
yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it'll be fine. We'll see how it blows over.
Okay. Well, it's a good marketing ploy. I'm going to implore everybody to pick up a copy of it right now before anything happens. And then you can say you have the copy, you know, the original version of the book.
Right.
Yeah, you know, this is a marketing ploy. But that's cool. But you, the bottom line is you use fidget spinners as a, like, because of your work in SEO as a way to promote
exactly.
the book. It's interesting that you say that stuff because, as I said, you know, Bitcoin is what brought me to illegal bugs. And I was nearly disappointed that Bitcoin did play such a minor role in the thing, because that's why I came to the book. But the book is so damn good that it's totally forgivable, you know? And I wonder if it wasn't as good as it is, that I would have been as forgiving about it. So good for you for writing a fucking kick-ass book that made me forgive that. And the other book you have too is well, it's less play on the pop culture SEO thing. Is that the Tony the Liar? That's your first book that you
Tony played? The Liar, yeah. That was my first one. That was the one I cranked it out in a week. So I guess it's a novelette, it would be categorized. Mm-hmm. I think it's only like 17,000 words or something. The one I just wanted to see. Okay, what if I want to write a story for me and publish it? Are people going to read it? A few people read it.
Uh-huh. But not enough. Well, obviously enough for you to keep going with the George Billions brand.
Right, yeah.
Because, but you had already been ghostwriting at that point.
Right,
regardless.
Yeah.
You're already writing at that point, regardless.
I was already writing something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's a little, that's sort of the evolution. You weren't quite playing with the SEO stuff at that point to
right,
get it
yeah.
to pop. So now that Illegal Bugs has been out since earlier this year, right? Correct? Or late last year?
I believe I published in December. If I recall correctly.
That sounds right. That sounds right. I can look at it really quick and get you for sure. Yes, December 5th, 2017. So just at the end of last year.
There you
go. It's got about a 6-7 month run now. Obviously, you like any good writer, you've already been working on other things. So how imminent is a new George Billions book?
Well, I actually just started something this week. I guess I can't say exactly how soon it will be out, but if I don't lose my inertia on this, I think it should be out within the next couple months. We'll see. Well, my goal this year was to publish like at least three, and we're already halfway through the year, and I don't have any, so I gotta hustle.
Hustle. And is that a matter of just being busy with ghostwriting stuff, or
oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I seem to have trouble balancing like paid gigs and stuff that I want to write. Like I have a finite well of creativity,
mm-hmm.
and you know, if I spend a day working on something that someone's paying me for, I can't spend that day on something I'd like to.
Right.
So yeah, I have a lot of stuff that I've started. Like I write like 10,000 words of a novel and then have to take on a gig. So that stagnates and then turns into nothing. But what I found is that ideas will come, like something I might have written abandoned. I might take an idea from it and then turn it into something and then work the current project. So even if this current one doesn't work out, it'll definitely roll into something along the line, I think.
See, that so many writers have that problem, finding the time to write, and you are basically a full-time writer, and you still have difficulty finding the time to write for yourself anyway.
Right.
But I can understand that drain of, you know, you, having to do other things, even if it is writing as writing other things.
Right.
By the time you can work on your stuff, it's like, I'm just whipped. I got nothing left in the tank.
Right, let's watch TV.
Now, looking forward, also, I wonder, I mean, you've done the whole self-publishing thing now. You've taught yourself how to do it and do it well. Would you even consider working with a publisher in the future, looking for a publisher, since sort of time becomes a commodity for you for your own writing?
You know, I feel like I would. I mean, it just, I guess it depends. Maybe I'm just practicing now. And I'll try that. And if you, part of the appeal of self-publishing for me is it's got like this, there's a punk rock appeal to it. You know, I used to do zines back in high school, publish them on a photocopier. And I've always been into like, you know, punk music and putting out your own 7-inch or whatever. And,
right.
Being able to publish your own book is, it's a similar thing, you know, just get out there and do it. I'm not opposed someone else, but I really like that DIY thing, you know.
Right. No, I'm completely self-published myself, and I do sort of have the attitude of like, well, if I'm capable of doing it all this myself, what's the point of going with a publisher?
Right.
And there are benefits, of course, but it's like, well, but I also reap the benefits of full, complete, total control of the whole thing. So I think that's
right.
Extremely appealing.
Yeah.
And if you can do it yourself, I interviewed a guy who was doing his own publishing house, J. David Osborne, author of Skullcrack City, and you know he was doing. He's doing, you know, his thing, and he's like, he was one of these publishers. Like, well, you don't need me, and I'm like, you're a publisher, and you're saying I don't need. He's like, yeah.
Right.
He's like, I encourage all my authors, like you know, to not lean on me and get out and learn how to do it because like you said, it is that day and age of anybody can do this, and it's, you know, as long as you do it correctly, it's an even playing field. I always took that to heart, and as long as I've always done my best to DIY it, that little punk rock sense appeal, of course.
Yes.
Well, George Billions, I really appreciate you coming on Bizong to talk about buying illegal bugs with Bitcoin and all your writing stuff that you got going on. It's been enlightening and a pleasure to get to talk to the man who wrote a magnificent book. And legitimately, I started out the first half of the year kind of reading okay books until I got to buying illegal books with Bitcoin. And it was the
first book.
The first book this year I was able to say that. That's a fucking five-star book right there. And
nice.
So it is an awesome book. It's got bizarro, it's got weird appeal. It's a fantastic crime noir thriller. It's got a billion things going on for it. It's awesome. Check out George Billions, Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin, and maybe you'll want to read all about the other stuff too. George, thank you so much for coming on Bizong and talking to us this week.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's been fun. Let's do it again.
There he is, Zongers, the very talented Mr. George Billions. As you've heard, possibly you've already read him and didn't know about it, but what you should do is make it a point to read something titled and authored by Mr. George Billions. I highly recommend Buying Illegal Bugs with Bitcoin. Check it out, Zongers. I ain't lying. I love that book. And Zongers, thanks for hanging around, sticking around to the end of the show. As I mentioned last week, let's not forget that at Scares at Care this year, Bizong Live will be presenting our first game show format. As the podcast was originally envisioned as a game show, there will be prizes. Come down and join the fun if you're going to be at Scares at Care this August in Williamsburg, Virginia, for Bizong Live, and maybe you'll win some cool Bizong prizes. And Zongers, this is a charity event, so Mr. Frank might be hitting you up for some donations for Scares That Care in exchange for your participation as a contestant on Bizong. You know, it's only fair, right? It's all for charity. Good, good, fun, fun. That being said, Zongers, also check out the Project Entertainment Network's store, where you can get yourself some sweet Bizong merchandise like t-shirts, leggings, those sexy, sexy Bizong leggings that Mr. Frank is trying to slim down to get himself fit into. And I am now the weight of one tooth less in weight than I was last week. So progress, Zongers, progress. That being said, Zongers, that's all I have for you this week. And you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Scribbler's Rest. Do you pop D20s like candy? Do you bleed D6s? Then Scribbler's Rest is your fix. Do some time with a crew of authors, artists, and other nefarious types. We have a case of dues in the fridge, and plenty of magic missiles to unload into your darkness. Slide us in your ear hole and let us work our magic. Feel our vibes every Thursday on the Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.